Welcome to Ballsy, the podcast where I interview successful artists and creators on how they got the balls to sell their art and turn their practice into a profitable business. As a former entrepreneur turned artist, I realized that being an artist is basically like running a small startup, and you, the artist, are the CEO. I talk to artists about their businesses, talk real numbers, growth hacks, tools and tricks, and how they were ballsy enough to make that their career. Okay, everybody, welcome to Ballsy, for those who have the balls to sell art. Today, we are fortunate to have someone who I've been a fan of for quite some time, Dan Lamb, who goes by Stopopomo, and I'm going to let her explain the name and a little bit about her work, and then we're going to jump right in. So Dan, if you would, give us a little background on what your work looks like, and to start, so people could follow along, either Instagram or social channels where they can find your work so they can see it and have context.
Sure. Thanks for having me. My work, I really think that you have to see it to fully get it, but you can check me out on Instagram at Sopopomo, S-O-P-O-M-O, or TikTok. Same name. It's short for So Post Postmodern. As a quick gist of what my work looks like or is, I would say they are organic, colorful, bold, textured sculptures. Sometimes they drip. Sometimes they sit on shelves. Sometimes they're just freestanding. I work with all kinds of scale, from miniature to bigger than life size. And yeah.
Fantastic. So I'm actually, normally I don't ask fabrication questions, but your work has always intrigued me from a fabrication point of view. So I will probably ask a couple along the way. So as I usually like to start, what'd you do before you were an artist?
I was in school.
Okay. So you went school for art and then became artist.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So you never had a real job.
So I went to undergrad from 2006 to 2010. And then I went straight into grad school and I graduated in 2014. So once I graduated, I did teach at a community college for a year. Okay. I taught like art appreciation was the class. So that was like a real job, but also it's not your full time, like 9 to 5 or anything like that. And then I also did... this was not for me. It was not a good fit, but it was this like after school program for kids where you teach them like engineering skills through Legos or with Legos, which was a really cool concept. And I really loved the idea of that, but I was not good with groups of 6-year-olds. I couldn't do it. So that's why it wasn't a good fit for me.
So you come out of art school. Did you find this style in school or how did you find this style of work or did it develop over time? Like, when did you know you had something?
So I went to undergrad and grad both for painting and drawing. That was my area of focus. So I started out on 2D. I would say my interest in like leaving the canvas started in undergrad. Even back then, I was like working with materials other than paint. At the time, I was like, what's resin? I started exploring that. Different kinds of like acrylic mediums, which is paint, but just like pushing the envelope of what could be a painting. And then once I got to grad school, that's when I started using polyurethane foam, which is the primary material of what I use now. But my application of that material was on panels. So again, it was sticking with the wall and like a 2D surface. They were very sculptural paintings. That was probably like the groundwork for what I do now in that I had to really learn the material. I had to learn like what it was capable of, what I could do with it, the limitations, all of that stuff. So aesthetically, I would say my work really developed right after grad school. Because after grad school, you lose your studio space, you lose that like structure of every day you go to the studio and all that stuff. And you have to worry about real life, getting a job, making money, all that stuff. So after grad school, I had a little tiny studio space and I honed in on what I could do with that limited space and still interested in the materials I was interested in. And that's really when I think the work, like it went from there. So I think like overall, it's just been a general evolution. But I think if you went back to 2015, you could be like, oh yeah, the direct lineage.
And what city were you in at the time?
After grad school?
Yeah. Like where was your small studio?
And in Midland, Texas.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically what happened was, after I graduated, I went to school at Arizona State in Phoenix, which was awesome. Love Phoenix. My boyfriend, he was working for his dad's company at the time in Midland, Texas. And Midland, Texas is like, talk about like the middle of Texas. It's Midland, Texas. It's an oil town. It's small. It's six hours away from
our capital. Capital of the world.
For sure. Yes, definitely. Yeah. So basically we had this like this plan where we would live there for a year and then move. So we followed through with that plan. So for that year, that's when I had that tiny little studio. It was a little guest house that was on the like where the house that we lived in was. And it was a tiny little, it was like a room. It was like a room size. It was really cute when it worked at the time. And my work got real small. And I think the idea is interesting. It's like a goldfish in like a bowl or something. Like the bigger aquarium you give it or bigger space it has, the bigger it can grow. So at the time, like the work got small, but it was good for experimentation and stuff because your materials are expensive, all that stuff. So when you can work small, you can push what you can do and make the most of it. But yeah, so anyway, it was in Midland, Texas.
As the center of the art world in Midland, Texas, how did you go about trying to sell this work? And when did you know that you actually had something on your hands? Like, when did it start pulling away from you?
I actually knew when I did my thesis show at the end of grad school. Okay. I presented all these paintings. I think there were like 12 large paintings, like 4 by 4 feet paintings. And the response from my peers was so amazing. They were so supportive. Everyone was so excited about the work. I had people, you have those little guest books that people can sign. And I had so many comments in there that people were like, this is so exciting. I've never seen anything like this. Like just excitement. And so it was more like I felt the energy. I was really excited about the paintings and the work, but the fact that other people were responding with that same excitement was like, oh, wow, this is just overall just high energy. And when I moved to Midland, because it is the art capital of the world, I was like, maybe I need to look for or try to seek out the culture, the art culture that I had in grad school elsewhere. And so that's when I got on Instagram, or that's when I actively started posting on Instagram. And it was just a way for me to, I would make something. And if I was excited about it, I would share it. I would post it. And then that same excitement applied, just like it did in grad school, applied to the internet. And people were like, oh my God, this is so different. This is so cool.
And so when did the first sales start coming in? Was it all Instagram, or were you represented at that point? What did that journey look like for you?
I did make a few sales through Instagram. There was a local art gallery in Midland. The owner was an artist as well. And I forget how I got connected with him, but he saw my work and he loved it. And he was like, come do a show here. There weren't any actual galleries in Midland. So this was just like this guy's passion project. And he was like, do a show. I did a 2-person show with another artist and we sold a bunch of work there. And then I continued posting and sales through Instagram, but no representation.
Okay. And so you now are, you realize you have something, people are excited, you're doing your work. Where did you move after Midland, and what was like the next stages of your career? And has it been like more linear, or did it like hockey stick on you at some point?
I feel like it's been like a hockey stick. It's been progressive.
From the outside, it looks like a hockey stick.
Yeah.
Like from the outside, I've seen you at, like, I saw you on Instagram a zillion years ago, and I was just in Zonamaca earlier this year in Mexico City, and I saw your work, right? So you've clearly gotten on like the art fair circuit. So I assume you're represented by a bunch of galleries. Like, what is, if you could, I'm fascinated to know what that process looks like. From, did the galleries come first? Did your Instagram come first? Did the sales come first? Did it all happen? What does that series of events look like? And how does that acceleration look? And so, you clearly have a bigger studio behind you.
Yeah, my studio is much bigger now. So I moved to Dallas at the end of 2015. Then my studio is actually in the house that we live in. It was just like a portion of the house. Most artists, I think when they're starting out, they have a room in their house or whatever that they use. And I had galleries. I had a gallery based out of Fort Worth, which is like the sister city of Dallas, approached me. It was a new gallery, and they had this beautiful space in a great location right near the Fort Worth Modern. And so they basically invited me to do a solo show. And I went and looked at the space, and I was like, oh my God, this building is amazing. It has natural light. Like it was really good space. So that was my first big show out of grad school. But actually, no, I want to take a step back. I forget about this part. So I move from Midland to Dallas. And during this time, it was like, that's actually when I found that part-time job of doing Legos with kids, because I need money, I got to pay rent, all that stuff. And I had actually been invited to do a group show in San Diego near the end of 2015. And when I went out for that show, I met another artist named Nick Wilkinson. And Nick Wilkinson is an artist, and he's also the owner of Left Field Gallery in San Luis Obispo. So I went out to this opening, met him. He was like, I love your work. Let's work together. And I was like, okay, cool. That's exciting. And so he saw my work in person. So that's actually one of the rarer cases, I think, where it wasn't found through Instagram. And so once I got to Dallas, he organized this 4-person show. I sent a bunch of work out to him. He sold a lot of it, like most of it. And then I was like, I hate this Lego job, so I'm going to quit that and see where this goes. Like, I had rent for the next couple of months, and I was like, let's keep doing that, and I'll look for another job or whatever. And yeah, and then the request just kept coming in for work, and I continued sending him work. I got sales through Instagram, and then that gallery in Fort Worth approached me for a solo show. And so that happened near the end of, in the fall of 2016. And so then the sales from that, and then it just kept going. So I never went back to a normal job or trying to find a normal job.
Talk about blessed and lucky. So you now have a little bit of scratch coming in. You're making some money. You feel some real trajectory. Was there like an inflection point where it got, holy shit, this is getting crazy? Or was it all inbound? Or did you like start reaching out to other galleries, to other things? Was it push or pull?
It was all inbound. Yeah.
All inbound.
Yeah, it's crazy. I've been asked these questions throughout my career. And every time I'm just like, I'm not like some business genius like that happened to do art or anything like that. It's happened organically and naturally. And I definitely credit Instagram with a lot of it, like most of it. And it was just the right time. I put in the work. I made the work. But I think hopping on Instagram at the time that I did, when it was just this exciting like way to share images and it really connected with artists, it was just good timing when it comes to like how quickly it got out.
That's a nice segue. So by the way, just as an aside, so I used to be in the hospitality business, and like I used to own fancy nightclubs a long time in my previous life. And I always knew I had a successful business when my phone rang, as opposed to me having to call somebody. That's how I knew it. Like I could tell you in a month whether I had, whether same thing inbound, you're in a good place. So going to Instagram. So did you post every day? This was back when it wasn't reels. This was just photos. Did you post every day? Process? What did that look like? And how fast? You have 500,000 Instagram followers now or something ridiculous?
Yeah.
So how fast did that grow? What did you do? Like you were right place, right time. So give me a little sense about what your Instagram looked like and did.
So at the beginning of Instagram, there wasn't really like a strategy. I just posted whenever. I still post the same way. I actually post a lot less now. But at the beginning, it was like this fun, it was just like this fun thing to do where you made something. And if you were excited to share it, then you just did. At least that's how I approached it. So I had like process images or just like more random things, like maybe a shot of what was going on in the studio. I played around with making things aesthetic sometimes, like how I would present or show the work. Then I started doing process videos. And really, that's when my account grew a lot, and it grew steadily. But I think the videos is really what did it. And I think what I remember happening was at one point early on, Miley Cyrus had started following me on Instagram. And I didn't know that, but I started getting all these comments of people saying, Miley Cyrus follows you. And I was like, what? That's so weird. So I went and I looked, and she did. And so we connected through Instagram, and she got a piece. So it was like a boost. And then the other thing that happened was I was sharing videos. And at the time on Instagram, the way they organized videos was, like there was, I think, like an explore page, but they had like categories of things. So my stuff would end up on like ASMR, and that was a whole different audience than just art people. So I credit that with a lot of why my account grew so quickly, is because it was just reaching different areas than just like the niche art world.
Yeah, you have oddly satisfying like your work has, and like the process of it, because it's all like squishy and things pouring and melting over each other and like very visually interesting things. So I can see that why that works so well. And so it was all inbound. I guess my next question is, in terms of your sales now, because obviously you're represented by quite a few galleries, what percentage is like still Instagram? What percentage is galleries? Do you have, obviously, as your business has grown, where do most of your sales come from?
I'd say it's a pretty even mix. I do work with a lot of galleries. I do at least one solo show a year. And then I also do, people reach out to me directly. I will, if I have work available in the studio, I will send that to them to look, take a look at. But I also do another thing once a year. It's a mini release. So I basically make, it's actually the stuff I have in progress right now. It's just miniature versions of my work. And I sell all of that directly from the studio. So that's like another big like thing that happens.
And are those additions?
No, they're all originals.
So they're all just one of ones. Mm-hmm. You do mostly sculptures or all sculptures? No prints, no additions, no. Do you do anything else besides just one of ones, a variety of scales?
No. Everything's original.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. How prolific are you? How many pieces do you make?
I actually don't know. Okay, let's say for the solo show, I have a solo show coming up in Portland. Each solo show I do, I usually send around like 50 to 60 pieces.
Okay, a lot.
Yeah. And then for this mini, this last year's mini drop, I did about 900 pieces. And then this year, I think will be 1,000.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Do you have a staff? Do you have a team of people or is it all you?
No, it is just me for the shows. For the mini drops, I have one assistant who will come in and help me do some prep work, but like creating the pieces themselves, like it's me.
Okay, so you're making 900 pieces?
Yeah.
And like, how do you ship them and box them? Does somebody else do that or do you do that too?
So for the shipping and fulfilling, like all those orders, I do have maybe three other people that help me. I have someone who helps pack my work.
Oh.
So that's somebody else doing that. But yeah. Making the work is me.
Oh, thank God. Because if if you said that it was just you, I was going to freak out. Do you have a bestseller or best moneymaker in terms of size or scale, or is it all over the map?
I think it's all over the map. But when I do gallery shows, smaller, like drips or anything that sits on a shelf are the most popular. With the minis, they're all very popular. Just because, so the reason I started doing the minis was because as an artist who like got popular on Instagram, I recognized that there was this huge audience of people who love art, but they don't necessarily, or they aren't necessarily able to buy work that's over $1,000 or whatever. And because I don't do prints or editions, I was like, what can I do? And I started making these just for my own like amusement, but I started making little miniature versions of my work and I would post that on Instagram and people would be like, oh my God, these are amazing. I would buy that. And I never thought about selling it, but the response was so positive. I was like, I guess I could sell these. So every year since I posted the first tiny version, I've done like bigger and bigger drops. So that's how it's progressed to the 900
count. What do those sell for versus like your regular work? What are the price points? How do you block those out?
So the minis range anywhere from like 150 to maybe 600 max. And then my larger works, the smallest ones will start at 1,000 and go up from there. And that ranges. I have all different kinds of scale. And of course, like you've seen, I have like large scale work too. So like that stuff gets way high up there. Yeah.
So basically the minis are in essence your prints, right?
Yeah.
Small, they're attainable, they're achievable.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's super smart. Now I've seen you've done some collaborations as well.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you go about getting those collaborations? I would assume a lot are inbound, but what does that process look to you? And how do you think about them just from a business and a financial? Because they probably take a bunch of time.
Yeah. If the price is right and the project is a good fit, then I will take them. That's another aspect. Okay. You mentioned, where did the sales come from? Is it Instagram? Is it galleries? But also a chunk of that is like collaborations. So I just did one with Meow Wolf. They do art installation. They have locations right now, three locations, Santa Fe, Vegas, and Denver. They're opening one here in Dallas and they're opening another one in Houston. And they reached out to me in like 2017. We've been talking for a while. We've talked about multiple projects, but nothing's ever come to fruition. And then once they announced that they were going to do Grapevine, they reached out to me and it was a perfect fit. It's here, it's locally. I mentioned Grapevine because Grapevine's like a suburb of Dallas. So that's what I mean when I say that. The process for that was very different than how I normally work. Usually when you work with brands or when you collaborate with a company or someone else like that, there's a lot more proposals, there's planning, there has to be approvals. With this space, with this installation, there was a bunch of fire safety stuff that like I haven't really, I've gone through some of that, but this was very detailed. So then it limited what materials you could use, how much of a material, that kind of stuff. So that was new. And for this project, I made a scale model, and the scale model was then 3D scanned, made into a 3D model, then CNC routed out of styrofoam, and then coated in this fire safe polyurethane. It was made in pieces, like a puzzle. And then that was shipped from New York to here. And then we installed it on site. And then the process from there was basically sealing the entire thing to make it look like it was made in the space. So no seams, it looked like it's just one giant piece. And that process took 2 months to do, which was insane. Yeah.
Is that the biggest thing you've ever done physically?
Yeah. So that piece is 15 by 15 feet. It's pretty big.
Oh, that's big. Now, in hindsight, did you charge enough for it?
No. So because I've done projects for more. I've charged more and I've done less work.
Right.
It was less involved, less physically involved.
Yes.
The reason I was cool with this was because I support what Meow Wolf is doing and I like their vision. Yeah. I like their mission. And so I was like, I want to be a part of this. I think if anything, like 20 years from now, they look back and they're like, this was like a moment in art history. And I think it is.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Now, so you're selling hundreds, if not thousands of works a year. Do you keep track of all of your buyers? Do you keep inventory? Do you ever have inventory or does it just go out the door? Like, how do you keep track of the back end?
So I don't really keep track of the buyers necessarily. If they're direct from me, then yeah, if they're signed up on my email list, then I have them in my system. As far as like selling through galleries, the galleries have that information of who collects from there. My inventory shifts. Most of the time I have available works maybe in the studio, but usually I have not much because the galleries are like, hey, what do you have? We have people, we have collectors who are interested. So as soon as I make stuff, it's usually not in here for very long and then it leaves.
And so how big is your studio space, by the way? Like, how do you manage all of these projects?
My studio is 1800 square feet.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I would have thought bigger.
No, it's just me. If I had a team, then absolutely I would need a bigger space. But
have you ever thought about scaling up? Have you ever thought about bringing more hands in, or just the demand doesn't justify it for now?
So last year I brought in my assistant that I still work with. Like, I work with him now more project based. I'm about to do this mini drop. He's coming in and helping me with prep work and stuff. But last year I hired him with the idea of like possibly scaling up. But I didn't like working with someone else in the space.
Oh.
That's what it came down to. I'm so used to working by myself and I keep the kinds of hours that I keep, and I grew up an only child. So I think there's just something there about being alone. It's so precious to me. And as soon as I had someone in the space, I was like, oh wait, I don't really know if I like this. And then the other part of it too, was I realized that unless I was in production mode, if I had a deadline or something, a project that was specific that I needed to finish, if I was just an experimental in between stage between shows or something, it's a disservice to me if I hand off something to somebody else. Every part of my process, I feel like I'm learning something. And there are times where I'll be working, even if it's like a boring part of the process, which I put in quotes because nothing's really boring. There may be something I discover where I'm like, oh wait, I can try this. And then I'll go and I'll do it. And it's, oh my God. And then that's a new door has opened because I did this thing.
I totally understand. I completely understand. Every great decision I've ever made has been a horrible mistake that turned into something awesome. So from what I gather, you don't work on acquiring new customers. They just show up.
Yeah. So one thing I did do differently this year was I started working with a PR firm. That's different.
So explain how that happened, why you decided you needed PR. Explain that whole process.
Yes. Up until the beginning of this year. So I started working with them in January of this year. All of my press has been organic. So it's been inbound, just like the audience and the galleries and all that stuff. And it's been great. So people are so supportive and like sharing my work and all that stuff. But I started thinking about, so last year, I don't remember what it was. Oh yeah, Miley Cyrus, she had her house photographed for Architectural Digest. And in it, there's a photograph of like her living room and you can see my sculptures on her shelf. And it credits, it gives me a little credit, Sculptures by Dan Lamb. And I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. Like Architectural Digest is a huge deal. And it was really nice to see my work within this interior design setting. It was not just like your gallery images or exhibition images. And I remember thinking like, how do I get more eyes on my work that's not just the arts? What about interior design, architecture, luxury, like that kind of world? And so there's all these, the art world is like bubble. And then there's all these adjacent bubbles that may overlap, which are all the ones that I just mentioned. And unless somebody in one of those bubbles knows about your work, they're not necessarily going to immediately be like, oh, I should write about Dan Lamb or whatever. That was like the kind of catalyst for me wondering about like, how do you get your work outside of your niche? So then this PR company reached out to me and they were like, hey, we work with these other artists. And I went and looked at their portfolio and like who they work with. And I was like, oh my God, like what? This is amazing. Like I was just thinking about this. And then these people reach out to me and they already work with artists. So it wasn't just, I had to go search for PR people who maybe worked with artists. So it was like already specific to that. So I was like, yeah, let's try it. Let's do it. So that was my curiosity for this year, was working with PR people, a PR firm.
Have you found it effective? Is it an engagement you're happy with?
Yeah. One interesting thing is it. So I've done a lot of interviews. I've had a lot of press continuously. It's been good, but it basically gives me more work to do, I guess I don't know what I expected, but I was like, okay, yeah, I guess this makes sense. I've hired these people. They're doing their jobs. They're doing it well. But now also I'm like every day I have an interview or I have to answer some questions or like whatever. So as far as in real time, there has been some cool press, like Interior Design Magazine did a little spread on me. Like, I got the cover of a local publication here, stuff like that. For my goals of wanting to branch out of just the art world niche, I think maybe I'll see the impact of it like within months or next year. I think that kind of stuff takes time. Yeah. It has filtered through.
For sure. I would assume it'll bring in collectors or people who didn't know you existed, non-art world. Mm-hmm. Your work has like such an interesting kind of standalone effect to it that like I could see tons of interior designs adding it in to mix up more classic spaces with something that's just interesting and funky. And do people come to you with like commissions, or do you do commissions, or because your work is kind of so amorphic, you just say, hey, take what I get?
So I will take commissions occasionally. And normally that I just lead with that. I can't create something exactly. So if you have a piece that you have in mind that you like from the past, I can create something similar, but everything's original. Nothing can be recreated to a precise, to precision. Yeah. But I'm generally not super excited about commissions unless they're like giant, it's like a collaboration or outdoor sculpture or something. I don't know. I feel like they take away from, I don't know. I don't love doing them. Yeah.
Okay. That's fine. Yeah. You have the luxury not to. Yeah. Now, switching us for a second, I'm always curious where artists spend their money and their time. How much time do you actually spend making art versus all the other things you need, like all the press, all the other things, what does that look like? And then where does most of your cash go?
I'm in the studio during shows and during things that projects or whatever. I'm usually in the studio 6 days a week.
Okay.
I usually get to the studio probably around 2 or 3, and then I'm here until 11 or midnight. Yeah. So that's during a deadline like kind of thing. When it's not like that, I have a lot more flexibility in my schedule. And so I'll like some days, because I know that it's not feasible to just be making stuff all the time. So some days I come to the studio and sit and look at the work for a while and just be in it, just think about it. Sometimes I just research. Sometimes I do something that's not related to any of my work, experiments, all that stuff. So yeah, I'm in here like a good amount of time.
Percentage wise, in terms of actual making art versus all the things to sell art, all the other things that encompass your career, mm-hmm. Is it 50%? Is it 80%? Is it like, how much time do you actually spend making the art?
Say anywhere from 60 to 80% of the time, depending on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's high. All right.
Yeah.
That's sort of the high end of the range, by the way. I've asked a lot of people this question, so you're definitely towards the high end of the range.
Because I feel like I just love to make things. I love to work with my hands. And I feel sometimes if I just start working with my hands, like ideas will start coming. And so that's what the process looks like.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And in terms of where you're spending your cash, is it on materials? Is it on press? Is it on labor? Is it on rent? Is it like, what does that look like in terms of your business focus?
Yeah, I spend a lot of money on materials. That's probably where a good chunk of it goes. This year, I'm spending it on this PR stuff. I try to save a good amount of it as well, because that's important. It's like a little safety net. I want to have that. And then the other part of, if I feel taking a vacation or something and I want to go big on it, then I will. Like a treat yourself.
That's why we do it. And that's why we work, right? Like
for the occasion,
I'll give me.
Yeah.
Now, it sounds like you do a boatload of sales. Do you have someone who manages the business aspect in terms of following up, collecting, dealing with galleries, or do you muscle through that all yourself?
Yeah, I do all that myself. So usually what happens is if I'm doing a show, any sale inquiries, I just send to the gallery. I just send them directly to the gallery, and I won't, because I don't have any work in the studio to sell anyway. So it's just go to the gallery. So that makes it easier on me. And then they handle all of that stuff.
And I assume when you sell yourself or whatever, if and when you do ever sell yourself, you price it at the gallery pricing and then you protect their pricing.
Yeah, everything's across the board. I remember when that actually happened. I remember when I first started pricing my work for sale right out of grad school, and I had people telling me, other artists telling me, if you sell it directly, sell it for half, because it's what you would get if you sold it through a gallery. And I was like, but that doesn't really make sense. Like, there's no incentive then for them. I don't know. There was something weird about it. So I was just like, I'm just going to keep it across the board the same.
Yeah. Why would you undercut yourself? And why would you take all the extra profit? Yeah. Artists and business folk aren't always like, it's why there's too many starving artists. But that's also why I do this podcast, right? So people like realize and learn tips and figure out like when in the process to do certain things. Now, you also have gotten, I think you're pretty big on TikTok also, no?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So when did you start? When did you find TikTok? How much do you spend? Do you do that more than Instagram now, or about the same? Or like, how do you look? And what other social platforms, if any, are you on?
I'm just on TikTok and Instagram. I have a Twitter, but I don't use it. Yeah, it's just words, and we're artists, so it doesn't really make sense. But anyway, with TikTok, I got on in 2019, and actually TikTok reached out to me. Yeah, and it was cool. It was 2018, I think they had bought that Musical.ly app, and then they rebranded as TikTok and made it into TikTok. And then in 2019, they did this big campaign where they reached out to a few artists, I guess that they had sourced through Instagram or whatever. And it was like a campaign for creating content. You made a TikTok, you created, I think, 9 videos, they paid for all the videos. And then that's how I started my TikTok account. And then eventually what ended up happening was I started seeing like someone had sent it to me from Reddit. It was like, they saw like an advertisement for TikTok, and in it was showing you like all kinds of videos you'd find on TikTok. And one of them was like one of my process videos. And I was like, oh, that's what it was. This is what it ended up being.
Yeah. That's why they paid me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, do you have any other revenue streams or channels that are not art? Any other like interesting revenue streams, or... It sounds like enough. I'm just asking, because some artists teach classes, some artists do other stuff. Do you do NFTs? Are there any other universes of which you play in, or no?
No, there.
Okay, great.
Yeah, that's it. It's a lot. I can't really put it anywhere else.
Yeah. I'm going to rename you Inbound from now on. That's going to be my nickname for you going forward. Wow. Are there certain galleries that I would now consider you a pretty established, well-known artist across the board. Do you have kind of exclusives in certain regions with galleries, or are there certain galleries that you stick with, and how do you handle new galleries that say who want to carry you, and do you like require them to put you in shows and things like that? It seems like you're in the driver's seat now. Are there things that you like request or ask or force them to do, or how do you deal with those type of partnerships?
So I do work with one of my the main gallery I work with is Hashimoto Contemporary, and they have locations in New York, LA, and San Francisco. And so I stick with them for New York. I stick with them for LA, San Francisco. There are locations where they have brick and mortars, like I'm with them there. I work with a few other galleries, one in Portland called Chafis Projects, which I'm about to do a solo show with, open a solo show next weekend. I have a couple galleries in Denver that I work with, Black Book Gallery, and I've worked with Miris Gallery. And so sometimes like these galleries, they do overlap, especially when it comes to like fairs and stuff like that. But my primary is Hashimoto. And basically it's just, I make sure there's no toes being stepped on. I make sure that any shows I'm doing doesn't like conflict with any like timelines. I like to give space in between shows. So like, I'm not going to do like back-to-back solos where it could conflict with sales for whatever galleries, because a lot of these galleries, I think they share some artists, there's some overlap there, and I'm sure they share some collectors. So I just want to make sure that there's like space for everybody. But yeah, I don't have exclusivity with anybody. And that's been like a really big thing for me, because my studio sales is like a pretty big part of how I make my money. And so the studio sales are online.
Okay, so you have a website that where you drive traffic, and you own that. You own those sales. You're not giving those sales to any gallery.
Yeah.
Good. Smart. Do you use any online gallery type things like the Saatchis of the world and things along those lines, or do you just strictly your website?
I just use my website. I have had people reach out about that stuff, but it just doesn't really, it's never really made sense to me for my position. Yeah, and I think right now my hope or aim is to work with more international stuff. I've got the US, and then Hashimoto took me to Zonamako. I've worked with a couple galleries in Europe, not on a consistent basis. So I have connections, but I want to continue growing. That's where the next like level is for me. And then the other thing is like doing more museum shows.
Oh, have you done a museum show already?
Yeah. So I just, yeah.
So good, man.
Thank you.
So good.
I did. So there's a museum here in Dallas called the Nasher Sculpture Center. It's amazing. I grew up going there. I did a show with them in 2021. I made like a 8-foot tall sculpture for a specific show. And then I am currently in a group show at the McNay Art Museum in San Antonio, Texas. It's like a 4-person show. Yeah.
That's so cool. Now, when you do shows like this, are there shows that you want to be part of or museums you want to be part of that you go and get aggressive about? Or do you just treat it like everything else and it just comes?
Yeah, so both of those have been inbound. But I will say that the relationships built to lead up to that point have taken time. So I didn't reach out to anybody to do this. But so the Nasher was, I had met the assistant curator like years ago. She had come to my studio, done a studio visit with me. I met the head curator or one of, I don't know. I think, I'm not sure exactly what he was at the time, but anyway, so that relationship was fostered like early on. And so I made that like connection. And then when the time was right, they reached out to me and they were like, hey, we're doing this, we have this programming called Nasher Public. We're focusing on Texas-based artists and you would be a great fit. And then I proposed to them like what I wanted to do. And they were like, we love it. So that happened. The McNay actually is interesting because the collections manager there, she and I went to high school together. Yeah, it's super cool. Her and the curator at the McNay, they wanted to put together the show that was, again, Texas-based artists. The show is called Beyond Reality. It's still up. It'll be up until October. And so then they reached out to me and they were like, hey, we want to do the show. Here's the concept for it. And do you want to be a part of it? And I was like, absolutely. It's so cool that, yeah.
Right. I haven't had those problems yet. Soon. But not yet. Fascinating. So as we start, like one of the things is as we start coming, as we get a little closer to the end of the interview, always try to ask people a couple of questions. One is like both sides of the same coin, which is what was like the biggest mistake in your career? And then what was on the opposite side of that, what was like the best thing that ever happened, like the biggest success, like the best thing that happened in your career. And it could have been intentional or unintentional, like it does, and both, by the way.
I don't know about biggest mistake. I don't know if that's.
Wow.
Yeah, like I can't, it might just be my approach to how I see it. Even like you said, you mentioned some of your biggest pushes in your work have been through mistakes. Maybe I don't see mistakes as mistakes because they are moments for growth, moments for improvement. I don't really remember a time where I messed up. I think there was maybe one time early on. This wasn't a mistake either, but I had accidentally scheduled two shows too close together. And I was, oh no, the gallerist is going to be so mad. Like I messed up. This is not good. I've ruined my relationship with them. And I reached out to him and I was like, hey, it was an accident. And he was like, oh no, it's fine. Thank you for telling me. And I was like, oh my God. So that was nothing.
Oh my, I'll tell you horror stories one day. Oh, even better.
And there may have been projects where I charged too little and that's a hindsight thing. Okay. Like maybe I should have. There was one project where I did, it was an intense amount of work, a lot of work. And there were things that were expected of me that were not in the contract. And only in real time in working at the space, whatever, I was like, oh, this is, wow, I should have charged way more for this. This is crazy. So there were moments like that. But the biggest, you said biggest achievement, most exciting thing?
Yeah.
So in 2019, I did this, it was a brand collab with this company called Steve's Ice Cream based out of, I think they started in Boston. And so they wanted to do a promotional like art event or whatever. So we worked with the ICA in Boston, which is an amazing space. Oh. So beautiful. And we worked with them for every year they do these three summer pop-up events. And it's like it's like oceanfront at the seaport or whatever, and it's like outdoors. So I worked with this producer named Patrick Schillen, and I've worked with him on a lot of projects, but he was like, I don't know, it was just a really cool, it was the first time I'd ever done anything this big. It was at the ICA. It was like, my sculptures were big and just sitting on the steps of the ICA, people were going in and out of them, like just interacting with them, just seeing the amount of people that were there, the excitement for the work, the surrealness of having my work at this museum with the water and this beautiful building. And then there was like press and stuff, which was also weird. That was the first time I'd really dealt with like cameras and like that kind of stuff. That was like a moment for sure. It was very like, oh my God, like this is huge.
That's awesome. And as an artist who's obviously had a lot of it, how do you define success as an artist?
I don't know. Maybe it's just a feeling. When I did the Nasher show, I think that was like a moment because I had worked so hard on the sculpture and then I was showing it in this museum that I had grown up going to. So that was like, oh my gosh, like full circle.
Like one of those moments where you realize like, oh, I've actually fucking made it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. That's absolutely awesome. So as someone who's, I would assume, you know, is living their dream out as being an artist, what tips, if any, would you give out there to like young talent in terms of getting noticed, growing their business, switching the inbound switch on? Any suggestions you would have?
So I can only speak from my experience. I don't know other people's strategies or anything, but I think a really big part of how I've navigated through the business side and the art side of my career is heavily relied on my intuition. And I think that's tied in a lot with how I make my work. And I just said success is a feeling-based thing. And I think that there are times where you'll maybe be presented with something or asked to do something that you don't want to do. I think listen to that. Like sometimes I've had offers for something that there's been moments where it's, oh, this company would be great to work with. But because of the way they were communicating with me and how they were treating me, it just didn't feel right. And so it was one of those things like, oh, if I just power through this, it could end up giving me a big payoff in the end because of exposure or whatever. But also, I don't think it's okay that they're treating me like this. And so which one's more important? And then and in that case, I just listen to what my gut is telling me. And I usually go with that. And if I don't go with that, then usually I regret it because then it's, oh yeah, there, like I should have listened. I knew better, that kind of thing.
My first grade teacher, Mrs. Yellen, always said, always go with your first gut answer.
Yeah.
I will never forget it.
It's true. Yeah.
Hey, we're coming up on the end of the hour here. This has been a phenomenal interview. I'm super excited to have learned how this all happened and that part of me envisioned that it was like this. And now it's good to know that it actually was. Like, and just watching you, I see you everywhere. Like every big art event I go to, I'm like, oh, there she is again. So it has been an utter pleasure and honor to hear about your story and your journey and how from the art capital of Texas, you've made it to the art capitals of the world. So thank you very much. Once again, remind people where to find you and the upcoming shows you have so people can track you down if they're in those cities.
Yeah, Instagram and TikTok, SoPopomo. I have a show coming up in Portland, Chafest Projects, Portland, Oregon, not Portland, Maine. And then I have my mini drop is happening at the end of August. That's the tentative date. And then I have another solo show coming up in New York in December with Hashimoto Contemporary.
Nice. How fast does the mini drop sell out? Like instantly?
Yeah, so last year I think it sold out in 10 minutes.
Okay. So I need to know how much planning I need to do. Like if I have to be there, like NFT stuff where you have to be there getting ready to refresh the screen. And...
Yeah.
All right, cool. I'm very excited. Anyhow, absolutely pleasure. Thank you for sharing your stories. And we're going to keep watching you and keeping an eye out.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Okay.